I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. There are 50 million Latinos living in the United States, accounting for about half of the current growth in population. They're now the largest minority at 16%. By way of contrast, African Americans make up 12% of the population and Asian Americans just 5%. This population growth among Latinos could play a key role in this year's presidential election, especially in swing states like Arizona, Nevada, Florida, New Mexico, and Colorado. Joining us here in our Philadelphia studios, we're going to focus on Pennsylvania, is Jose Ojola. He's co-founder of Latino Lines. That's a redistricting coalition. He's also a veteran. And Jose, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Have we seen in Pennsylvania the kind of growth that we've seen in some of these other states across the country?
Absolutely. Latinos are the fastest growing population in the United States, as they are in Pennsylvania.
And when you look at the Pennsylvania population, how diverse would you say it is?
It's very diverse. The majority of Latinos in Pennsylvania are Puerto Rican, but we have a large influx of now Dominicans and other Latinos from all over Latin America are now moving to Pennsylvania, and they are growing.
And is it centered largely around Philadelphia, scattered across the state?
Well, we have a large population here in Philadelphia, but we have a large population throughout what we call the 222 corridor. So we're talking about Allentown, Bethlehem, Reading, Lancaster.
And the reasons people came?
Well, you know, Pennsylvania is just, we have families here, just like any other immigrant group. Once a family member moves to a certain area, you know, other family members come and we start to grow. And that's just the same dynamic that's happened all across the country.
Your organization is involved and focused on redistricting. Why is redistricting such a key issue?
Well, redistricting is so important because it's basically voting rights is what it comes down to. As most of us know, redistricting happens after a census. So every 10 years, we do a census, and based on those numbers, we try to draw political lines that represent communities of interest.
And in Pennsylvania, there has been some controversy about these redistricting lines. In fact, it's gone all the way up to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court.
Yeah, that's correct. We've been involved in this process for about over a year now since it first began. And we have been working and meeting with the Reapportionment Commission in Pennsylvania as it relates to this issue. The Supreme Court of Pennsylvania found that the new maps weren't kosher, if you will. So
I'm not sure that's quite their language, but I understand what you're saying.
Right. So they sent it that back down, and the Reapportionment Commission has to draw new maps to fix the problem that the Supreme Court found. So.
And what's the problem from your perspective?
Well, the problem from our perspective is that right now the Supreme Court is requiring that the 2001 lines be used for the primaries coming up here on April 24th. The problem with that is that we have huge, and I'm not just speaking primarily from a Latino perspective, I'm speaking just from a perspective of a Pennsylvanian and a concerned citizen, is that we have deviations now. The population shifts. It changes. We have some districts that are over 40,000, if we're talking about 2001 lines, and some that are under 40,000. So that does not do any justice to the voters of Pennsylvania. Period. So that's a big issue.
And you're talking about the obviously population shifts, people moving from various districts. And why is the state using the census of a decade ago and not the census of today?
Well, I guess that, you know, they found that that there were some issues in the area of Allentown with the lines that they found that weren't, according to the Supreme Court Justice Surik, that, well, this is the federal court now, because
right.
we took this to the federal court, to the federal level. And the federal court sided with the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court. And basically, the problem is that you know, we can't go back to those old lines because, number one, it's against the Pennsylvania State Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
We can't have primaries based on decade-old lines. And it's just not representative of the new population here in Pennsylvania, period.
And when you talk about districting or redistricting, the idea is that these districts be contiguous. And we know from the past and frankly, from current districts, some of them are kind of crazy looking.
Right, absolutely. You know, Redistricting is a process that is done by our politicians, right?
So every 10 years.
Every 10 years. So a lot of times what happens is the districts, they need to reflect. You can't be crossing into other counties or if you know certain other political boundaries, natural boundaries. But you also have to take into consideration certain communities of interest that live in these districts. A lot of times these districts are drawn to protect incumbents. They're the ones that are drawing their own lines. So you don't always get the most let's say legal mm-hmm. or lines that are representative of communities, or they start cutting into other areas that they shouldn't be cutting into, and that's why they look gerrymandered, and that's an unfortunate situation.
But your group, and you're not alone in this, are saying that redistricting should represent the neighborhoods rather than represent the aspirations or the benefit of the politicians.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we advocate. I'll give you an example.
Go ahead.
We here in Philadelphia we've had the Latino community has only had one district for the longest time. It's been the 180th. During this new redistricting process, we also have, they gave us with the input that we were given the reapportionment commission, the 197th, which is now also, well, according to the new maps, a majority Latino district, so over 55%.
Right.
So that district wasn't drawn in a way that we approved of. We liked the numbers, the percentages. They listened to us on that aspect of it. But we testified against the lines because the lines were gerrymandered. So as a group that advocates for fair redistricting, we couldn't stand up there and say, okay, well, we liked the 55% Latino in the district, but we couldn't stand up there and say, you know, we approve of the lines because the lines just weren't drawn contiguously.
But is the idea to create districts so that Latinos get representation and perhaps even Latino representation in government?
Absolutely. You know, the redistricting process isn't just about drawing lines. It's about protecting also. It's also about protecting communities of interest. And we're not just talking about Latinos. So if you go to the same church, if you go to the same schools, if you work in the same places, if you live in the same neighborhoods, you know, you want somebody who is going to represent your interest in government. So that's what we're advocating for. And it's not so much that we want Latino representatives. We just want the ability to choose who we want to represent us. And that should be what everybody should be fighting for.
And I know that this in part goes back to the 1965 Voting Rights Act.
That's correct.
In what way?
Well, the Voting Rights Act was created basically to protect the voting rights of African Americans. And as it relates to primarily during those times, a lot of people know that African Americans were forced to take literacy tests, just outlandish requirements to be able to vote. So the Voting Rights Act protects folks from having legislation that requires people to do things that really diminish their voice in the voting process.
There are calls in Pennsylvania and other states as well, which is to require people to show, you know, proof of identification when they go to the polls to vote.
Right.
Does your organization have a position on that?
Well, me personally,
you personally?
Yeah, no, I don't advocate for having voting IDs. You know, voting is a right. When you start introducing legislation to have requirements for folks to come in and vote, the way the legislation process works, things are tied to bills that folks aren't aware of.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we know we have a good voting process right now in Pennsylvania. The numbers of folks that are coming, you know, there's a falsehood out there that millions of people are trying to come out and vote when they're not registered. That's not true. You know, so this is a law that hurts not just Latinos, but it hurts people that are poor. It hurts elderly citizens in Pennsylvania, and it's an unfunded mandate. The numbers out there around this law that's saying that it's only going to cost maybe $4 million are ridiculous. This is something that could reach up into the 20 millions of dollars.
In order to do the kind of background checks that would need to be done.
Background checks, IDs, and then it's really up to voting commissions on local levels to support this mandate. It's they have to market this information, and all that costs money.
Do you think, though, that Latinos would be particularly disadvantaged by the requirement for some kind of ID?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, there's in our community. It's a struggle. It's a struggle for us. When a community is disenfranchised over and over and over again, and I'm speaking specifically about redistricting, mm-hmm. What happens is over time the community starts to lose interest in the process, in the voting process, and just civic engagement. Period. We've been working extremely hard to change that. The Latino community in Pennsylvania, the Latino community all over the United States is much more educated now. They are, organizing better. We're talking not just throughout the state, but we're talking across state lines, and we're organizing. It's a problem that we've had for a long time and that we're fixing. But it does hurt Latino voters because, you know, we have elderly folk that still don't speak English. So for them to have to go out to get an ID to have to vote, a lot of folks in our neighborhoods don't have cars. You know, they live in urban areas, so they rely on public transportation. So now you're asking somebody to go out and have to go get an ID, have to wait in line, and have to come out of pocket to pay for an ID to go vote.
And we're almost up on a break here, but the Time Magazine cover story about the 50 million Latinos in the United States, the kind of political clout that Latinos could have. Do you see it that way? Do you see Latinos as a voting bloc?
Absolutely. I think that much like the Asian community, much like the Jewish community, much like the Italian communities in different areas, you know, we are American citizens here. I come from a long line of service to this country. My grandfather, my father, myself, my brother, we've all served during wartime in the U.S. military. I care about the issues of this country. I care about the things that are happening in Pennsylvania. But we also have our, like I said, we are a community of interest, and there's things that we have to protect.
Well, let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation with Jose Ojoyla, and he's co-founder of Latino Lines, a redistricting coalition here in the Philadelphia area. As he said, he's a veteran and joins us on Radio Times to talk about the Latino vote, as it is described. And we're taking calls, particularly want to hear from our Latino listeners at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Germantown Friends School Craft Show supports WHYY, bringing woodworkers, glassblowers, fiber artists, jewelers, weavers, and other fine craft artisans from around the nation to Philadelphia. The GFS 28th Annual Juried Craft Show takes place this weekend, Friday evening through Sunday afternoon, at Germantown Friends School. Cafe opens Saturday and Sunday, serving sweet and savory treats. 215-900-7734 or online at germantownfriends.org/craftshow.
I'm Ray Suarez. Coming up on America Abroad.
The $65 million question is, are we going to be ready if this power succession doesn't work?
As a new leader takes the reins in North Korea, what comes next? After Kim Jong-il, America and the two Koreas, on the next America Abroad from Public Radio International.
Tomorrow night at 11 on WHYY.
Penn's College of Liberal and Professional Studies supports WHYY. Penn's Master of Liberal Arts program allows students to combine graduate-level classes into a single master's degree built around what matters to them. Their interdisciplinary curriculum includes seminars that offer new perspectives on subjects that interest the student. Instructors and peers in creative writing workshops share experiences as writers that can help students hone their craft. Details on how to pursue your passion for writing at Penn online by searching Penn MLA.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Latinos are now the largest minority in the United States. About 16% of the population is Latino. They are a diverse population, and while immigration matters, their concerns largely mirror the rest of the population. And this being an election year, both parties are trying to figure out how to woo Latino voters. This promises to be a very close and contentious election season. We're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. And again, Jose Ojola is our guest, co-founder of Latino Lines. Let me ask you a little bit about the issues. And as I said to you during the break, I don't mean to have you represent 50 million people. But nonetheless, the Latino vote is an interesting, I mean, it's an interesting way to look at particular issues. I think for many people, they would say, well, of course, immigration has to be on the top of the list. The research that I was doing yesterday says, no, it's not. How do you see immigration?
Well, immigration is obviously it's a driving force right now, and in a lot of the campaigns that we're seeing, particularly in the Republican Party, it's an issue that needs to be addressed. We have millions of undocumented folks here in the United States. It's an issue that needs to be addressed from all levels. They are intricately intertwined into our economic system here in the United States, and the answer isn't clearly defined. It's something that we all have to work very hard towards. But I definitely think that immigration reform is something that we have to look at.
Well, interestingly, President Obama said early on, even while campaigning and early on in his administration, that he would introduce some kind of immigration reform. That hasn't happened. And actually, deportations are dramatically up under President Obama compared to his predecessor, President Bush.
Right. Well, President, you know, I can't speak for President Obama.
Of course.
He made a promise. I think that he's working towards that promise. Again, you know, the president doesn't have, the power to pass legislation on his own. He needs approval from Congress and the House and so forth and so on. But I think that this is something that all legislators need to come together on and work hard on. President Obama, I believe, is working hard to fix that issue. But, you know, he also has to, operate within the confines of the law. And the law is that, if you're here illegally, there's a good chance that you're going to be sent back to wherever it is that you came from. That's just how our law works. But that's not to say that he is not for immigration reform. Mm-hmm. I think that he's pushing hard for that. And I just think that, it's being delayed or held up.
But interestingly, going back a couple of years under the Bush administration, obviously a different Congress, there were efforts to try to reform immigration. And it just hit a roadblock, it seems. I mean, it seems like this is one of those issues that is hard to find consensus on.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Folks have very strong feelings about immigration. I think a lot of falsehoods out there with regards to the Latino community.
Such as?
Well, we're all here criminal, that we're all here illegally, that we're not involved in the voting process, And that's not true. Like I said, my family has served this country valiantly. We have a lot of Latinos that they have. I just think that, it's not a good idea to discount the Latino vote.
But do you feel like you are looked at sometimes with suspicion that you're here illegally?
Not me personally, but I think that the general consensus is that they like to group Latinos all as just one, you know, one group, and that we all vote the same, and that we all, you know, look the same, and that we all have the same religious values, and we're just as diverse as any other group here in the U.S.
I was looking at some research from Pew and other organizations looking at, again, the Latino voter or Latino voters, and it struck me that the issues of concern, jobs, the economy, health care, they really mirrored the larger population in terms of how to prioritize these issues of concern.
Absolutely. Immigration isn't the main concern, I think, in all Latino communities. You know, we're concerned about jobs. We're concerned about crime. We're concerned about education. We're concerned about all these things that everybody else is concerned about just as well.
If I can just ask you a couple of personal questions. As you said, you come from a military family. Your grandfather served in the, as you described, segregated World War II.
Yes,
right?
Yeah, in the 65th mm-hmm. Infantry. The 65th Infantry was an all-Puerto Rican infantry unit in the United States Army.
And where did he serve?
He served in Japan during World War II.
And then your father served in Vietnam.
My dad was drafted out of college, out of Puerto Rico, and he served in Vietnam valiantly. He's a war hero. He has all the same medals John McCain has. You know, so
was he captured?
He wasn't captured, but he, you know, he has a Silver Star, two Bronze Stars, two
wow.
Purple Hearts.
Oh,
you
wow.
know, he's a highly decorated a war veteran. I served in Somalia during 1993. And my brother did two tours in Iraq and one in Afghanistan. He's still in the Army.
And he's still in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And just to pick up on what you said about serving in Somalia, as you were telling me, this was right after Black Hawk Down, which must have been a very, very dangerous place to be.
Yes, it was. We were there basically to move the troops out of Somalia.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And your brother is still in the military?
He's still in the military.
And served in Iraq?
He served two tours in Iraq and one in Afghanistan.
And that's Jose Ojola, and he's co-founder of Latino Lines. That's a redistricting coalition here in Pennsylvania. And we are talking about a whole host of issues. The Latino vote, such as it has been described, is could be the defining or deciding vote in this election season. Some 50 million Americans are Latinos, and we are talking about what that could or should mean. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Particularly interested in hearing from our Latino listeners and about some of the issues that you care about, and do give us a call. Let me see what Paul from Center City has to say. Paul, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi
thank
there.
You.
You're welcome.
It seems to me, from what I've observed, that one of the most concrete pieces of legislation that would have a very, very positive effect in this community is the DREAM Act, which would basically allow kids who've mostly grown up here all their lives, who are here through no negative intent on their own part, anyway, to become citizens. And that DREAM Act is favored by one party and blasted by the other party. And I just wonder why it is that some in this community would go with the party which is against that DREAM Act. It doesn't make sense to me. I know people talk about some of these quote-unquote values issues. And do you think there's a way to get past that kind of thinking and get to something that's a little bit more pragmatic? That's my whole question.
Well, thanks for calling in, Paul. And Jose, go ahead.
Well, Paul, thanks for calling. Thank you for your question. I agree with you. I think the DREAM Act is an important piece of legislation that should be passed. You know, we have, and this is really me talking now to, I think, the Latino community in particular. This is why it's important for us as Latinos who are citizens here in the United States and have the power to vote and have, you know, the power to get involved in the community, for us to register to vote, for us to be involved in issues of redistricting, because this is when our voice counts. This is a piece of legislation that really affects us. And we can't, you know, depend on everybody else to support legislation that affects us directly. So as I know that for a long time, Latinos have received a bad reputation along the lines that they don't come out to vote mm-hmm. during elections. And, you know, I have to say that overall, you know, that's pretty much true. Again, like I had mentioned earlier, that's starting to change. You know, we have, I think, increased the level of civic engagement throughout the state of Pennsylvania. We're having discussions across state lines about these issues, and we're really getting Latinos to become educated voters. I think that more importantly, more important than anything else, is than just going out there and towing the party line, is that you become an educated voter. So the more involvement that we have as a community, I think that's when that piece of legislation is going to change.
Now, Paul, thanks for calling into Radio Times. And I was hearing that the DREAM Act had Republican support not so long ago, and now it's seen as a very partisan issue.
Right. You know, these things are coming up. Well, they've been around for a while now, but it's an election year. So
indeed it is.
So, you know, the thing is that certain issues are going to make the top of the list, mm-hmm. and they need to have issues where they can stand firmly on and stand firmly against. And that's just the nature of the beast during the election year.
But why has there been low voter turnout among Latinos who, you know, could vote? I'm not sure they're all necessarily registered. Is it a registration problem, or is it a voting problem, or a combination of the two?
I think it's a combination of the two. We do have folks that are registered to vote don't always come out and vote. Let me speak about Puerto Rico.
Sure.
Puerto Rico has one of the highest voting turnouts in the world, in the free world. I think it's over 80% voter turnout on the island of Puerto Rico. But Puerto Rico has elections for pretty much everything once every 4 years. So it's a lot easier to come out and vote. Folks come out and they vote the once every 4 years. Here, you know, we're having an election, it seems like, every other day. And so it's kind of, for a community that's used to voting, just once every 4 years, they come here and now all of a sudden, you know, there's all kinds of different elections that they have to be involved in. But, you know, it's our responsibility to educate our community. It's our responsibility to get our community involved. And that's what Latino Alliance is doing.
And you don't care who they vote for. You just want people to vote, to be part of the process.
Absolutely. I'm a registered Democrat, but my family, my father and my brothers, you know, they're registered Republican. It's important to be civically engaged.
Let me get, looks like Meredith from Chestnut Hill to join our conversation. And Meredith, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I agree with your guest that it is very important that we don't accept 10 years old gerrymandering of districts.
Old census.
I disagree with him as far as not needing identification. I've worked as an election official here in Philadelphia and other places. And as long as we have so many dead people on the rolls of the to vote, we need identification.
Well, Meredith, we've done whole shows about this, and in fact, did a show not so long ago about how some of those roles can be incorrect, but there hasn't been the kind of evidence of actual fraudulent voting, and there have been some studies looking across the country and including places like Pennsylvania, but I know it's a live issue, and Jose, do you want to weigh in on that at all?
Well, yeah, absolutely. There hasn't been a lot of evidence that says that people are coming out to fraudulently vote. That's the premise of
voter impersonation.
Right. That's the premise of this whole voter ID thing, is that they're saying that let's talk about Daryl Metcalf, who's in Pennsylvania, who's the one that has kind of introduced this bill. Representative Metcalf introduced House Bill 934, and basically it's made its way to the forefront of the legislative agenda in Pennsylvania. The bill calls to waste at least $4.3 million of from the Motor License Fund. This is something that is going to cost Pennsylvanians a lot of money, you know. And according to the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center, the cost of HB 934 is likely to be at least $11 million and could reach as high as $25 million over 3 years. And that doesn't include, you know, the hard to identify but certain costs to counties for keeping up with the mandate. You know, so there's a lot of things that when bills are introduced, we get caught up on oh, well, people are fraudulently voting, mm-hmm, you know. Mm-hmm. But we're not really looking at the whole entire bill and seeing what it's going to cost the state of Pennsylvania.
And that's Jose Oyola, and he's co-founder of Latino Lines. And joining us now is Dr. Victoria Francesco Soto. She teaches politics and governance at the University of Texas in Austin. And nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're very welcome. And we've been focusing largely on Pennsylvania, but also talking about the fact that there are now 50 million Latinos living in the United States. You're down there in Texas, and I'm assuming Texas is one of those swing states where Latinos could play a pretty big role.
Well, Marty, in Texas, the Latino population is the second largest in the state and rapidly growing. However, the state is still pretty solidly red, but what we're seeing in about the next 3 to 4 election cycles is that Texas is going to start to come more and more into play. Why? Because of the Latino population. Mm. However, going into the 2012, we do know that some of the core swing states will hinge on the Latino vote, mainly Nevada, Colorado, Florida, and New Mexico.
I'm curious, we're up here in Pennsylvania, obviously. I'm curious, with Texas having the second largest Latino population, why it is red, as you say, tends to skew Republican.
Well, the non-Latino population, the non-Latino white population, is still the largest group. Texas is approximating a majority-minority state. Mm-hmm. It's quite not there yet. And the other issue is that even though numerically Latinos may be a very large group, there are big chunks of them that are ineligible to vote, either one, because they do not have citizenship status because of their documentation, mm-hmm. or secondly, because they are not 18 years of old age yet. Latinos are a very young population, and they are still coming of age.
And obviously, Texas, a border state. I'm assuming those border issues are pretty important in your state.
They are border issues, and also in addition to that, is I know you were talking previously about voter ID laws.
Yes.
Voter ID laws here in Texas. We just were dealing with that last year in the state legislature. We're seeing it across the country popping up. In some states, it's able to take hold. In others, it isn't. So, for example, in New Mexico, the state with the largest per capita Latino population tried to pass a voter ID law, and it did not go anywhere. Mm-hmm. But the push to do something is really being seen across the country.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation, and we are talking about Latino voters in the United States. 50 million Latinos now living in the United States, the largest majority, 16% of the population. And joining us by telephone is Dr. Victoria DeFrancesco Soto, teaches politics and governance at the University of Texas in Austin, Texas. And Jose Oyola is with us here in our Philadelphia studios, co-founder of Latino Lines. That's a redistricting coalition here in Pennsylvania, and we're going to take some more calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Kimmel Center supports WHYY and presents the Canadian Brass on Saturday, March 10th in Verizon Hall. Dressed in black suits coupled with white athletic shoes, the ensemble performs music from the classical repertoire with unexpected and humorous leaps into jazz and popular standards. Local organist Jeffrey Brilhart joins the Canadian Brass for a lighthearted afternoon of serious yet fun concert music. March 10th at the Kimmel Center, 215-893-1999 or kimmelcenter.org.
I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. A church in Georgia starts a job networking ministry to help people who are unemployed and hundreds show up. Also, the new CD from jazz drummer and composer Jack DeJohnette. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
today at noon on WHYY.
The Atlantic City Convention and Visitors Authority supports WHYY and presents the 4th Annual Atlantic City Restaurant Week, March 4th through 10th. Food lovers can experience ethnic, gourmet, seafood, steakhouse, or casual restaurants. There are dozens of locations providing a variety of dining selections. For more information, menus, reservations, and a list of participating restaurants, acrestaurantweek.com. Sponsored in part by a grant from the New Jersey Division of Travel and Tourism.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are talking about Latino voters with our guest, Jose Ojola, and on the telephone, Victoria DeFrancisco Soto. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Victoria, let me go back to you, and Jose, I'd like to get you in on this as well. Looking broadly, and this is to you, Victoria, how have Latinos been affected by the recession, by the mortgage crisis, by some of the sort of economic financial problems that the country's been struggling with?
We know, Marty, from some studies that the Pew Institute did and that were released this summer, that regrettably Latinos were the worst hit in this recession. In terms of wealth indices, we saw that Latinos lost the most wealth, have the greatest debt, and the other portion of this is the loss of homes as a result of the mortgage crisis. Latinos tend to be situated in the states that had these mortgage crises hit the hardest. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Florida, Nevada, Arizona, and California. In addition to that, we know that Latino unemployment, just like African American unemployment, is always a couple percentage points higher than non-Latino white unemployment. So while we're looking at 8% unemployment now, at the aggregate, Latinos are still at about 11% unemployment. So take any of the issues that the general American electorate is suffering from and magnify that for the Latino electorate.
Jose, you're nodding your head. You want to add to that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. She is absolutely right. And again, let me speak for the community in North Philadelphia,
sure,
which I'm heavily involved with. That community is predominantly Puerto Rican. The Puerto Rican community of North Philadelphia is the poorest Puerto Rican community outside of Puerto Rico. And we've had issues with, again, redistricting. I think that this is why redistricting is so important, because when you start to split communities of interest apart, when you start to pack districts so that they have less representation, you don't have a voice. You don't have a voice, and you can't address these particular issues that Dr. Soto is talking about. That's why it's so important for us as Latinos to become civically engaged and involved in this process, because nobody else is going to speak for us. Nobody else is going to address these issues. We know what the issues are. We know that we're losing homes. We know that we don't have jobs. We know that our kids are dropping out of a school at a higher rate than any other ethnic group in the country, specifically here in Philadelphia also. Mm-hmm. So we need to be able to have folks in Harrisburg, in Washington, D.C., that are listening to our concerns, and we want to be involved, and we want to make a change.
Now, Victoria, let me go back to you, and picking up on what Jose just said about the high level of dropout, and picking up on some of the things that you have been writing, also the fact that Latinos have the highest birth rate in the United States as well. Is that of concern to you?
It is. Latinos having the highest dropout rates really is a dismal outcome when we think about the fact that education is that main tool in your toolkit to attain a better livelihood. That being said, though, there are some glimmers of hope.
Mm-hmm.
We are seeing that more educational programs geared at Latinos are being put in place. Actually, the Obama administration has been working on that. Additionally, we have also seen that last year in 2011, the enrollment of Latinos in community colleges and in colleges in general spiked. So on the one hand, we have seen the Latino educational attainment is at its lowest level, mm-hmm. but in a sense, we can fall no further, and it's the impetus to rise up.
Well, and I wonder, does that impact, Jose, males or men more than women?
Yes. I mean, it's the dropout rate is much, much higher amongst the males than it is with the females. I work for a university, Temple University, so and I deal with students constantly at Temple University. I'm the advisor of a Latino Leadership Institute at Temple that's affiliated with the Latino Leadership Institute out of New York that's a part of CUNY Hunter College and City University of New York in New York City. The kids, they understand these issues. They know the hardships that they had coming to college. We're talking about kids now that they're still the first ones to go to college. So, you know, we're even though we've been here for a while, education is something that needs to be put at the top of mm-hmm. our list, and it's changing. And these kids understand that, so they're graduating college, they're going back home, they're educating their parents about the issues. They're not just involved in their community at the university level; they're involved in the community around Temple University, and so they're making a change. They're making a huge difference.
And just underscoring the need for education in today's society. Let me get back to our callers here at 1-888-477-9400. We have, looks like Ariel from North Philadelphia. Ariel, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. What's up, everybody? My name is Ariel Arnau. I'm a professor of Latino studies over at Temple University. And, you know, Jose is a good friend of mine.
Yes, I know.
I wanted to add to the discussion because, you know, Latino Alliance has been pressing for the issue of gerrymandering, and it's extremely important. But I also think that, you know, the systematic disenfranchisement of Latino voters goes beyond simply the issue of gerrymandering. You know, one of the key issues that I've seen in my research has been the rather selective enforcement of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. You have many districts here in Philadelphia who speak languages other than English, and yet you still have polling places where there isn't access to, you know, bilingual polling grounds. You know what I mean? The Puerto Rican community here in the 1970s actually sued to actually get that change, and you know, but yet we still have that problem. You know, in addition,
you know what, Ariel, let me just take that point only because I want to give both of our guests a chance to weigh in on that. And Victoria, you're down there in Texas. I don't mean to make you sound so far away, but do you want to just weigh in on what Ariel just said?
Yes, when we're talking about how do we give Latinos a greater voice, there are a number of factors at work here. So one of them is districts, right? So how do we have districting? The other is, okay, well, we've got the district down, but when you go to the ballot box, what is it in front of you that enables you to participate effectively? If the ballot is in a language that you don't know, how can you make an informed decision? Other issues that come into play a little farther back are also registration requirements, so things we may not think about. So there are some states where you have same-day voter registration, and that makes it a lot easier for folks to participate. Other states, you have to register, you know, 2-3 months in advance. So, you know, for better or for worse, there's no silver bullet in terms of addressing, you know, the lack of Latino political participation. There are a lot of little pieces that go together that ultimately are what are going to make a pathway to the Latino vote more accessible.
Jose, you want to add to that?
No, yeah, I agree. I think that you know, these are all issues that continue to affect you know, our community. Again, you know, let me go back to this voter ID law that's happening in Pennsylvania. You know, we're using funds to try to make this thing happen, which is really targeting Latino voters, and it's being done under something called the Help America Vote Act of 2002. That, as we all know, after, you know, George Bush won the election in, coming out of Florida after that big old mess. That, you know, this is something that was established to try to help provide funds to the states to replace punch card voting systems, you know, to establish the Election Assistance Commission to assist in the administration of federal elections and, you know, to otherwise provide assistance with the administration of, you know, certain federal election laws and programs. But, you know, the funds are being used instead of creating programs to help Latinos and other folks to come out and take part in the voting process instead to disenfranchise voters.
Ariel, there's one. Let me give you time to make one more point, and then we got to get some other callers in, but go ahead.
Oh, yeah. The NAACP actually conducted they published this report called The Long Shadow of Jim Crow, and they found that here in Philadelphia in 1993, prior to Election Day, campaign workers walked door-to-door in Latino neighborhoods to convince or coerce voters to cast absentee ballots. The Department of Justice found that, you know, workers were misleading voters about documents they were signing, steering or intimidating the voters into voting for particular candidates. And voters reported that they were misled about the state's absentee voting laws and told that, you know, they could vote at home as a quote-unquote new way of voting. Hmm. So, I mean, I agree with everything that your speakers have to say. I just think that there's an inordinate number of obstacles that prevent these communities from actually fully participating in civic society.
But Ariel, are you saying that that's also happening today? It happened in the early 90s. It's also happening today? Or we don't know?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? I think so. I mean, the fact that we continue to have low levels of voting, I think is a direct reflection of all of these things. There's been a lack of trust and, within the Latino community, you know, with the entire process. And it's a direct result of all of these obstacles.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And let me get, looks like Lisa from Broomall to join our conversation. And Lisa, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm calling. I just have a comment this morning.
Sure.
My in-laws are Latinos. They're from South America. They are very conservative, and their friends and their families who've lived here are very conservative, and I feel that we're forgetting about them.
Well, in terms of how we understand this broad Latino vote?
Yes.
Oh, fair enough.
Marty,
go ahead, Victoria.
So that is absolutely right. So the Latino population here in the United States is very diverse. We tend to clump them into broad chunks, such as Mexican-Americans or Democrats, but there is some diversity within. And namely, we see a pretty substantial cleavage between immigrants of Mexican descent and also immigrants of Cuban and Central American descent, because these are folks who came here for two different reasons and also tend to come from two different backgrounds. So the Mexican immigrants that we have here in the United States, Mexicans making up about 60% of the population, mainly came for economic reasons. Mm-hmm. So they are usually middle, lower class, and they wanted a better livelihood here in the U.S. While your Cuban and your Central American immigrants who came starting in the 60s and then through the 80s were usually higher socioeconomic status and came to the United States for political reasons. So in the case of Cuba, fleeing communism, fleeing Fidel Castro, and in the case of Central America, fleeing, say, Nicaragua or El Salvador, or the countries with the revolutions that were going on. So the nature of the immigrants coming over is definitely going to differ between, the folks who came over for political reasons rather than economic reasons.
And Jose, as you mentioned, your family's largely Republican, reflecting some of what Victoria was just saying.
Absolutely. We do have a diverse community. I am interested in all Latinos coming out and being involved in the process. We traditionally, I think that we are conservative. You know, we have very deeply rooted religious values. We believe in family and the family structure. And so a lot of our values seem to mirror a lot of the things that the Republican Party talks about. But we have a lot of issues within our community that are civil rights issues that we also tend to, side with a lot of the Democratic points of views. Really the Latino community, because of, still you know, it's a wide open community that could really vote either way. Right now, we're supporting the redistricting plan that we're supporting is actually the Republican plan in the state of Pennsylvania. You know, I think that the Latino community here in Pennsylvania is kind of come at a crossroads with the Democratic Party on this issue, particular issue.
Well, Victoria, let me go to you. I'm looking at the clock here, but do you see, and this is enlarging our conversation even beyond Pennsylvania. Obviously, we're in the beginning of what will probably be a very contentious presidential election year. Do you see the two parties trying to figure out how to woo Latino voters?
In this particular election, Marty, I don't. The Republican Party has gone so far to the extreme with the tenor of the anti-immigrant rhetoric that it's going to be hard for them to backtrack to the middle and gain a significant amount of Latinos. There are going to be Latinos who support the Republican platform, regardless of immigration stances, but we're not going to see those independent or Democratic-leaning Democrats cross over, something which we saw during the Bush years. You know, there were a number of Democratic-leaning Latinos who liked George W. Bush's compassionate conservatism. They saw that he did very well in Texas, which is a big Latino state, and they gave him his vote. Hmm. But in this particular year, we're really not going to see maybe more than 12 to 15 percentage points of the Republican vote coming from the Latino community.
Jose, I'm giving you the last word. Go ahead.
No, sure.
Any final thoughts?
Just final thoughts. You know, that I want folks to pay attention right now. I know, like I said, this is the fastest growing community in the United States. In Pennsylvania, we have just under 720,000 Latinos living here. And the next voting cycle, you know, 10 years from now, you know, we're going to have probably a million. So please, you know, continue to be involved civically. We have to listen to our Latino voters because they are the fastest growing, and eventually we're going to have a really strong say.
Well, Jose Ojolo, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times, co-founder of Latino Lines, and Victoria DeFrancesco Soto, thank you very much for joining us as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. She's a fellow at the Center for Politics and Governance at the LBJ School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas, also Director of Communications for Latino Decisions. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us for the first hour of Radio Times. We'll be right back.